what we discussed in our previous class.
Whatever ability we have in the gift of Krishna, we should assume that it's ours, and Brahma demonstrated by acknowledging his ability to create material world is going to be for Krishna's mercy. Verse 23.
Yeah. It's an important theme in this section. Any other points?
Sleep is materialistic and therefore Mayavadis conclude that Brahman is formless, like, you know, how can the form of the Lord be? But here we can see that the Lord is actually enjoying transcendental sleep, like creative yoga nidra, creative sleep. And in his sleep he is creating so many universes, and actually he is not sleeping, he is meditating on his pastimes in Vrindavan.
Any other questions?
We discussed that verse 21, Prabhupada is to defend Mayavadi philosophy. Prabhupada, this is the best of the Prabhupada. Not the best of the Prabhupada, I guess, is to defend Mayavadi. It starts with the normal attitude in the morning. It's all our time.
Yeah, it's very clear. Prabhupada gives very clear arguments to define impersonalism. Any other points?
You must have faith in the protection of God. You must have faith in the protection offered by the Lord. Verse 29. Lord says, I have already done everything. Just depend on me and all auspicious results will manifest in due course.
It's also one of the important things in this section of the Brahma's prayers. Anything else?
In verses 31 and 32 we saw that the same knowledge which Krishna gave to Brahma in the Chaturshloki, that I am in everything and everything is in me. So the same knowledge Krishna is imparting again to Brahma. Because Brahma will now deal with so much of matter for creation, like he has to come in contact with so much matter. So Krishna is like teaching Brahma how to see Krishna in each and every particle and atom of matter, so that Brahma is not led astray of Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Yeah, many of the, in this section of prayers by Lord Brahma, many of the prayers and much of the philosophy which is taught by Lord Brahma during this section, it is extremely it is very relevant to the chapter of Shloki also. In other words, what he spoke, Lord Brahma spoke, what was spoken to Lord Brahma in the chapter of Shloki, in the ninth chapter of the second canto, many of these same philosophical points are being explained or extended upon or elaborated upon in this section with the prayers of Lord Brahma. So we see the Lord is giving the same instructions, but he's giving much more detail on that. How come you're so
late? A little bit fast.
What's that?
A little bit, we have moved a little bit fast, so we can wait.
You moved your house?
Yeah, we moved to Keysborough.
So you have to leave a little bit earlier when you come in?
Yeah.
Okay. So leave a little bit earlier when you come in. Any other points?
One point which got attention in Mayapur, the spiritual master is the representative of Lord Nityananda, whereas in Vrindavan he is the representative of Jiva. So, another thing that was from text 26, going to the Shura, says that Lord Brahma was taking shelter of the Chaitya group, which is basically the guru within the heart.
Yeah, that comes up again tonight in one of the sections. Any other things? Any other points?
You also mentioned the verse 29, the test of a true devotee is when in times of difficulty they get more engrossed in devotional service. And that's the test of a true devotee.
So we see in the beginning of chapter 8, then glorification of the Bhagavatam is given. And the origin of the stream of Bhagavatam is given. Because during chapter 7, Vidura has asked Maitreya many questions, maybe 40 or so questions. And these questions will be answered by Maitreya Muni. So in order to begin answering, then he gives the history of how the Bhagavatam was narrated in this universe and the origin of the Srimad Bhagavatam within this universe. He came from the Lord himself, Lord Sankarshan himself, and it was spoken to different sages, and then those different sages heard it, and then it was imparted to Maitreya by Parashar Muni. And now he is about to impart the same knowledge to Vidura. So then in chapter 8, there is a description of the Visarga, or the secondary creation of Lord Brahma within this material world. So this is the first subject matter which is described by Maitreya to Vidura in this section of the Bhagavatam, of the description. So he begins to describe the Visarga, or the secondary creation, how Lord Brahma appears within ignorance, right? He's very confused about his position after he's created, and then how he performs tapasya in order to become enlightened, like that. And then how he finally attains God consciousness or full realization of Krishna. And then that takes us to the end of chapter 8, and then in the beginning of chapter 9, or at the last verse of chapter 8, it is described that Lord Brahma becomes infused by the mode of passion, which means the desire to create the material world becomes very strong within him, for him to perform his service of creation. So at that point in time, in chapter 9, he begins to offer prayers to Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, invoke his mercy. And there are very nice themes which come out in this section in the beginning of chapter 9 through Lord Brahma's prayers. The first thing he establishes in verses 2 to verses 4 is the personality of Godhead, the supreme personality of Godhead. That God, after his realization, he has realized that the Supreme Lord is a personality, is Bhagavan, which means he is a person possessing unlimited opulence. So then this is the realization he gives, and this forms the foundation of all of his prayers and all the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. The philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to enunciate or to elaborate on this verse, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam, which means Krishna is a personality, Bhagavan Swayam, he is a person himself. So everything Brahma is elaborating upon is substantiating these points. So the first point he makes in his prayers is that, yes, he is a personality. I've realized the Supreme Absolute Truth, and my realization of the Supreme Absolute Truth is that he's a personality. So this is his beginning of his prayers. And then different themes come from his different prayers. He prays to the Lord that, please give me the ability and the intelligence to perform this act of creation. And that is the mentality of any devotee. Before we do any activity, we pray to the Lord for his mercy to give us the ability and the intelligence to perform the activity. Otherwise, it's not possible to perform any activity on behalf of the Lord properly. It is only by the Lord's blessings and mercy that we are able to perform any activity, even the most simplest of tasks. Because you can perform the activity or the devotional service, but even if it's very simple service, like sometimes very simple, but if you're not praying to the Lord and you're not feeling dependent upon the Lord, then the mood is not right. And if the mood is not right, then it is not pure service. So therefore, Lord Brahma is showing us, no matter how big or small the service is, the activity is, what the consciousness of the devotee should be while performing this activity. And he prays to the Lord that, please do not let me become affected by Maya or overcome by the mode of passion. Because in the material world, we are constantly interfacing or associating with the material energy. And the material energy is very powerful. Mama Maya Duracharya, Krishna says. It is a divine energy and it is very potent and it has the ability to bewilder the conditioned souls. So therefore, Lord Brahma prays, even though I'm engaged in this activity, and even though I'm engaged in this activity employing the mode of passion, which is also a very dangerous mode of material nature. The mode of passion is also very... mode of passion binds us to this material world. It will be said tonight in the prayers tonight, in the... actually, the Lord says tonight, he describes the mode of passion as being vicious. And the actual Sanskrit is sinful. By the influence of the mode of passion, we perform sinful activities. We perform activities which are against devotional service, or which are not for the Lord's pleasure. This is the definition of a sinful activity, an activity which is not done for the pleasure of Krishna. So he prays to the Lord, please protect me, because I'm about to engage in working with or associating with the material energy. And the material energy and the modes of material nature are very powerful and they may influence my consciousness, so please protect me. And then, after making these prayers, we see in the middle of chapter 9 that he becomes fearful because he sees around him the devastating waters of the material creation within the universe. And he sees these waters are very powerful. And he feels somewhat fearful. So therefore he prays to the Lord for the Lord's protection. And then the Lord begins to answer him or respond to him. And the Lord says, do not fear. Simply perform your activity or your duty, and I will take care of the result. And this is one of the great themes of this chapter, one of the great themes of the Bhagavatam and of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada gives the example in the purports tonight of Arjuna. That Arjuna performed the activity, even though it was a very difficult task. But Krishna said the result is already established. I've already organized the result. The result is already taken care of. It is under my control. It's not in your control. You simply perform your duty. So therefore, Arjuna performed his duty on behalf of Krishna, and Krishna took care of all the results. So this should be the consciousness that we need to come to as devotees. Simply surrender to Krishna, and Krishna will take care of all the results within our devotional service, as he did for Lord Brahma. He said, you simply do your activity, depend upon me, and I will take care of the result of the activity. Everything will work out auspiciously. So then the Lord offers these different advices to Lord Brahma. And now, tonight we'll finish the chapter from verses 33 to 34, and the Lord will continue to give his instructions to Lord Brahma about his transcendental position. And he says to Lord Brahma, you just perform your activity, depend upon me, and you will see me everywhere within the creation. Right? If you're in the right devotional consciousness, you will see me everywhere. You'll see nothing but me, and therefore you'll be protected. And this is actually how we become protected in the material world. Even though we're in the material world, and the material energy is very powerful, but if we learn to see Krishna everywhere, if we learn to always be Krishna conscious, always thinking of Krishna, always chanting the names of Krishna, then we'll be absorbed in consciousness of Krishna. And therefore, even though we're within the material energy, it will not touch us. It will not affect our consciousness. So these are some of the points which will be brought out, have been brought out by the Lord, and he will give further prayers tonight to describe these things.
Any points? Or questions?
Lord Brahma was performing a service, isn't it? How can it be considered as a sinful activity?
No, he's saying that the mode of passion, the effect of the mode of passion is that it affects us to perform sinful activities. Somebody gets too much of the mode of passion, they perform sinful activities. And we see it in modern society. Everyone's caught up in the mode of passion. Because they're too much in the mode of passion, then they perform sinful activities as a result. So as devotees, if we allow ourselves to become too overwhelmed by the mode of passion, then we'll get too caught up in materialistic activity. And if you perform too much materialistic activity, the danger is you may perform sinful activity. Just like sometimes as grihasthas, we become too much absorbed in making money. Yeah, it's the mode of passion, it's the mode of passion. I have to make more, I have to make more, I have to make more. So the danger is that you lose your Krishna consciousness, and the danger is that you can even go to the point where you may even commit sinful activities. Being further and further and further influenced, that's the nature of the mode of passion. So all the living entities you see in the material world, because they're under that influence, then they get led further and further and further away, and then they just become absorbed in sinful activity. And then they become addicted to that sinful activity. And then they suffer as a result of that sinful activity. Krishna says in the Gita that the mode of passion, the nature is, that it'll be nectarian in the beginning, but it'll be poisonous in the end. And that's the nature of the mode. Any other points?
Then you also say that when you have the mode of passion, or when you're doing an activity, you start thinking, because of the influence of the mode of passion, that you are the doer. And that becomes a sinful activity, because when you have the consciousness, because of the influence of the mode of passion.
Yeah, I remember, for example, like the elephant at the circus, you know, the time changed to the legs. Leg is conditioned, that the time is so long, can't escape. After some time, even if you take it out, it won't go anywhere. So similarly, the mental activity, you get used to it. Even if nobody prays for you, it's still working. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, even people when they get to the age of 60 and like that, and they should be thinking about retirement, and then they think they're not all happy. So they just keep working and keep working and keep working. It's a passion. Prabhupada actually mentions in the Lilamrita, he mentions things in volume 5, volume 4 or 5. He says that during our life, when we're young, when we're middle-aged like that, he said that you should engage all of your mode of passion. Yeah, do lots of service for Krishna. So that Prabhupada says that when you get old, the passion will be burnt out, the ignorance will be removed, and then you can simply situate your mind in the mode of goodness and just go to Mayapur Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says that if you haven't burned out that mode of passion by serving Krishna very vigorously during your life, then when you're old, he said your mind will still be disturbed. So that's why we have to fully engage ourselves in Krishna service as much as possible. So when we're old, we'll be peaceful, then we can just chant with a very peaceful mind.
Just coming back to that point, you said before you perform any activity, you need to pray for Krishna's mercy.
Yeah.
Think of some devotional service. Before we do that, the service that we are performing is for Krishna. So if we don't have that attitude of like asking for his mercy, but we know that the work that we are doing is for Krishna, so are these two modes different? Not asking for the mercy, but the work that we are doing is for Krishna, so it goes without saying.
It may, but the point is that in the consciousness of the devotee has to feel dependent upon Krishna. It has to be that mood of dependence. That should be the internal consciousness while the devotee is doing that. So that may automatically be there, but the point is that we have to develop that consciousness. Right? When we're doing the activity, we feel that we are dependent upon Krishna for the success. In other words, Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches, Sharanagati or surrender to Krishna has six components. Right? Krishna says, Mam ekam sharanam braja, surrender to me. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that sharana or surrender has six components. And one of the components is humility. So when the devotee does the activity, he should be feeling humble and dependent upon Krishna. Not that I have so much ability or I have so much ability that I don't need to pray to Krishna. You may have the ability, not that, but the ability has originally come from Krishna. So the devotee has to develop that internal consciousness of being humble and feeling that I'm dependent upon Krishna. It's very easy in the consciousness to become proud.
Peru, on that point, if somebody is thinking that this business is Krishna's business and he's doing humbly and taking shelter of Krishna and his spiritual master, can he go on?
And until some time. Business means work.
Work.
Yeah. Yeah.
For Krishna. And you mean he's doing humbly.
Yeah.
And asking help from Krishna and spiritual master. So how long can he go on?
He can go on until he dies. That's no problem. But the point is how much of the work is for Krishna. Because the phal means the fruit, right? It means you earn so much money from the work, but then how much are you giving to Krishna? Well, that's the point. So you can say, well, I will work till the time I die, but it is a pure devotional service. Right? It only becomes a pure devotional service if the result is offered to Guru and Krishna. If one is going to the time of death just accumulating the bank balance, that's not pure devotional service.
No.
That means that's karma mishra bhakti. It means that you're still mixed with material desire. It means you just have to take birth again. You'll become a devotee again, but you'll just get a job and just do it all again. So what was the point? So yeah, you can take that attitude of I will surrender to Krishna. But also the point is, and Jiva Goswami points this out, and different acharyas point this out. There is Gauna Bhakti, this is mentioned by Rupa Goswami also. There's Gauna Bhakti and Mukhya Bhakti. Gauna Bhakti means secondary activities, secondary devotional activities. They support devotional service, but they're not part of the nine processes of devotional service directly. So when we get older, then we should be engaging more and more and more in the primary devotional services, not the second. Not like, because you go out and work. Right, so you're working in your job, right? But it is somewhat secondary, unless you're very advanced, because it's not directly connected to Krishna. You connect it to Krishna because you give some of your wealth to Krishna in his service, in the service of Krishna. So then it becomes connected, right? But it's not actually a primary devotional activity. Primary devotional service means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam. Right? All these types of activities, these are the primary. So when we get older, then we should be engaged more in the primary. Or even you can say at the end of life, you should be exclusively engaged in the primary. That should come.
Should we be going into preaching? More preaching? And
that would be like the best thing to do. That's what Prabhupada was doing. Because when Prabhupada said that you have to burn out your motive passion and everything, then I think it was Tamal Krishnamaraj or one of the devotees said to him, then Prabhupada, then what about you? Prabhupada said, I am not so advanced. So he was just engaged in preaching and preaching and preaching like that. But then there comes to a point where one should preach as much as possible. Then you come to a point at the very end where you may just want to absorb yourself. You saw like Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Right, preached and preached, but then at the very end he said, okay, now that's enough, right? And now I would just absorb myself fully in remembering Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna. And you saw Indrajumna Swami when he had that scare with his health a few months ago, the same thing happened, preaching and preaching and preaching. Now he thought, maybe I don't have much time now, I'll just hear and chant about Krishna. So that should be the example that we follow.
That is, we are maintaining the deity in the home because we are living a little far from the temple, so I am maintaining the deity in the house. So, sometimes if there are programs in the temple in the morning time, Is it like I can't leave the service in the home and then come to the temple? Because I've been doing regularly there. So, it's, what should I do? So,
you have to discuss with the guru. Discuss with the spiritual master.
And one more question regarding this one. That is, if we are doing activities, like even that yesterday Guru Maharaj said that even when Arjuna was killing is such a bad like activity, even when Arjuna was killing, but still because he was doing it in the instruction of the Lord and he is depending fully on Krishna, it became pure, that activity. So similarly, like when even if we engage in material activities, Prabhupada was writing Srimad Bhagavatam and getting the money, and from that he was giving the temple. That was perfect, you know, because he was doing only devotional activity, same time he was getting enough funds to run the temple as well. So, but if we want to maintain the deity and we want to preach a lot, and we need like a bigger house and everything, you know, for that facility, and maybe we make a temple and bring everybody in that area together, like a preaching center or something like that. So, that when we are having that kind of plans and when we are working for that, it's not possible to do only devotional activity. So nice to do, it's easy, but it's difficult to get money from the devotional activity. So for that reason, if we engage in material activities, so like still it's a problem, or is it equal?
No, it's gone up. It's just secondary, that's all.
Secondary.
Yeah, secondary. But it's connected to Krishna, then it purifies
the even if it's preaching purposes, it's still secondary. Yeah, I can feel it's secondary, because a little bit of mode of passion is completely coming.
Okay, so now verses 33 to 44. When you are free from the conception of gross and subtle bodies, and when your senses are free from all influences of the modes of material nature, you will realize your pure form in my association. At that time, you will be situated in pure consciousness. Chaitanya.
In the Bhakti of Samhita Sanyas, it is said that a person whose only desire is to render transcendental loving service to the Lord is a free person in any condition of material existence. That service is the Swarupa, or real form, of the living entity. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, also confirms this statement by declaring that a real spiritual form of the living entity is eternal servitorship to the Supreme Lord. The Mayavad school shudders at the thought of the service attitude in the living entity, not knowing that in the transcendental world, the service of the Lord is based on transcendental love. Transcendental loving service is never to be compared to the forced service of the material world. In the material world, even if one is under the conception that he is no one's servant, he is still the servant of his senses, under the dictation of the material modes. Actually, no one is master here in the material world, and therefore the servants of the senses have a very bad experience of servitude. They shudder at the thought of service because they have no knowledge of the transcendental position. In transcendental loving service, the servitor is as free as the Lord. The Lord is Swara, fully independent, and the servant is also fully independent, or Swara, in the spiritual atmosphere, because there is no forced service. There the transcendental loving service is due to spontaneous love. A reflected glimpse of such service is experienced in the service of the mother unto the son, the friend's service unto the friend, or a wife's service unto the husband. This reflection of service by the friend, parent, or wife are not forced, but are due only to love. Here in this material world, however, the loving service is only a reflection. The real service or service in Swarupa is present in the transcendental world in association with the Lord. The very same service is transcendental love can be practiced in devotion here too.
So what are these points?
Burden of beast and burden of love. We learned about the burden of beast and burden of love. Thank you. Prabhupada writes in his purpose about the burden of beast and the burden of love. He says that is not a burden when the, like the mother is caring for the child or wife is caring for the husband.
Yeah.
That's not a burden. The burden of love.
In relation to the earth and the demons were a burden of beast, burden of love for the earth, and the demons were a burden of beast. The karma of the soul is to serve, whether he is in the spiritual world or in the material world. He has to serve. Does this contrast with the servitorship, the material world, which is coarse? And they are doing it to the senses, and they have bad experience in the end. But if you compare this into the spiritual world, there is no such difference as servitorship, because we, as a servant of the Lord, we are free. We have this swaratha. So that means we are not forced to engage in that service. So that pure love and affection is coming there. Because of pure love and affection, even if we are serving Lord, we don't feel like sort of. It's not for submitership, it's because of Panavaniyaka. So that's been contrasted, submitership between material world and spiritual world.
I say, Kaseva Kripasi says that a transcendental person, both are independent. Sarva and the service. Hard to understand. It's only the same conceivable process. Because you continue to think that, okay, always you have to position is servitorship. Right? So, what does the freedom come up?
What is the freedom?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, the problem.
Lord Brahma has always seen the Lord. So why is Lord telling him that when you come out of the conception of the gross and you know the subtle bodies, you will attain pure consciousness.
Whether he's speaking to him or he's just speaking generically in general like that. Because it says when you are free from the conception of gross and subtle bodies in your senses, so whether or not he's speaking to Brahma or he's just speaking generally. May be speaking generally at this point because Brahma has already just seen the Lord in the previous section. So.
Just to substantiate that he is speaking generically, the translation here is very similar to the verse Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nasuchatina Kamshati. This is Mad Bhakti in Labhate Bhakti. The Lord says that once you come out of three modes, the anchoring, then at that time one is situated. This translation is very similar to the translation of the verse.
And if you look in the Sanskrit, I was just looking in the Sanskrit, it doesn't seem to indicate this specifically speaking to Brahma. In the Sanskrit, it doesn't seem like there's any particular indication that he's speaking directly to Brahma. It just sounds like he's speaking in general.
But
what is saying, you will realize. Prabhupada said, the way Prabhupada translated it, Prabhupada's written like that, but it doesn't seem in the Sanskrit there was any particular mention. Didn't seem like he was speaking directly to Brahma at that point. It seems like a general statement.
Two
shloka
before he says, oh Brahma, the
No, no, he's speaking to Brahma, but whether or not he's saying this verse is specifically about Brahma. He's speaking to Brahma, I know that part. So, the nature of the soul is pure devotional service. And this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is reminding us of again and again and again. Jai Pataka Swami was reminding us of this point this morning in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. The goal of sadhana bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami, is sadhya. Sadhya means perfection. Perfection means bhava bhakti. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, this was established. The whole point of the Harinam Anukirtanam process, or the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna following the footsteps of our spiritual master and the previous acharyas, the entire point of following this process is to realize bhav, or to realize, to develop a sentiment towards Krishna, to develop ecstasy towards Krishna. The tears should come from the eyes when we chant. The Bhagavatam has established this in the beginning of the second canto of the Bhagavatam. So when do the tears come from the eyes in relation to Krishna? When will the tears come?
When the heart will become soft.
When the heart will become soft, yeah. Or when one realizes one's bhav, or one's relationship with Krishna. This is called, Rupa Goswami calls this in Sanskrit, it's called stay bhav. Stay bhav means permanent ecstasy, or one's permanent relationship. So the whole point of Krishna consciousness, the whole point of the Bhagavatam, the whole point of our sadhana is to realize our eternal relationship with Krishna. Our lost relationship with Krishna. What is our eternal mood in service to Krishna? So here the Bhagavatam, the Lord himself, is reminding us once again of this essential point of what the Bhagavatam is for. Right? The whole point of our practice is to re-establish our lost relationship with Krishna. Our permanent ecstasy. Our permanent relationship. Jyotirabha Swami was addressing this point this morning in his class. This is the point of Krishna consciousness. Right? To reawaken our lost relationship with Krishna. So, the nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Vivera Sarupa Hoi Krishnara Nitya Das, that the eternal relationship of the living entity with the Lord is to be Krishna's eternal servant. Now, Prabhupada points out in the purport that the nature of this relationship is that the devotee becomes Swarat. In the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is described as being Swarat. Swarat means independent. It means free. It means you have complete freedom. Krishna has complete freedom to do anything and everything that he desires. That is his position. Right? There is no restriction to Krishna. Right? Because Krishna is a fully spiritual entity. And Srila Prabhupada points out here, and this is also pointed out in the say like the 5th and 6th chapter of the first canto when the pastime of Narad Muni is there, Prabhupada describes that when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, so one develops bhava, prema, bhakti, pure devotion, one also becomes fully free, unrestricted, because he is fully on the spiritual platform. So it means that the soul, or the living entities, who are Krishna's eternal servants, the pure devotees, they are also swarat, fully independent or free. Right? Because they are not affected anymore by the material conditioning which we are currently affected by. They are not affected by the three modes of material nature. Right? That is swarat, that is freedom. Right? At this point in time, even though we are pure living entities ourselves, but we are overcome by the three modes of material nature. Right? And then the different material miseries which the living entity suffers in the material world, hunger, thirst, sleep, fear, anxiety, different types of birth, death, old age, disease. All of these restrictions on the soul, when one becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, one becomes liberated from all those restrictions. So therefore he experiences full freedom at that point in time. At this point in time, we're not experiencing freedom. But if you become a pure devotee, Krishna will give you freedom. And you're not restricted by the modes of nature. You're not restricted by the desire to sleep, right? Or the need to sleep. You're not restricted by anger. You're not restricted by hunger. You're not restricted by lust, right? You're not restricted by any of the effects of the material energy. So this is the constitutional position of the living entity. But he only realizes his constitutional position when he becomes pure in his devotional service to Krishna. When one becomes pure devotee, then one no longer has to be affected by the modes of material nature, all these. So then you become fully swarat, you become fully independent. Right? And you live on the spiritual platform. Brahma Bhuta, Prasanatma, Na Shochati, Na Tamshati. This will be attained in that verse. Any points so far?
Can I have a clarification? What will be the swarupa of the soul when he attains, when he realizes his Svarupa, how does it look like? What is the form of the Svarupa of a living entity when he attains his...
That depends on your bhava, your sthayi bhava. That's what it depends on. In other words, what is your permanent relationship towards Krishna?
Yeah, but are there any, you are a gopi or you are a gopa, or there are some fixed reva positions, or there are infinite number of realizations or infinite number of forms within the transcendental world, so that your svarupa is not restricted to a particular form? Or am I not clear in that question?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't understand what you're saying.
See, the soul, they say that it is 1/10,000 of the air. See, but when you attain your Svarupa, how does it look like? What is the form? Spiritual.
It means that at this point in time, because we're in the material body, then the soul is described as being 1/10,000 the size of the tip of a hair. So that is like the seed of the rose bush. Right? But from that seed, the 1/10,000 inside the Atma, then when it manifests to its full capacity or its full, then it becomes like a rose bush. That's its form, its Svarup. But that's all contained in the seed. So at this point in time, our soul, our original Svarup, the form that we originally had in relation to Krishna, which has been covered at this point in time, that will be re-manifest. And Prabhupada explains that there is no difference between the soul and the body. The soul and the body are one. They are. The spiritual body and the soul is the same thing. So if your sthayi bhava or your swarup or your eternal relationship with Krishna is in Sakya Ras, right, in Goloka Vrindavan, and you're one of Krishna's friends, then you have the form of a gopa or a cowherd boy. Each cowherd boy is different. Each one looks different, each one dresses differently, everyone has a different father and mother. Everyone has a different personality. You see in the Nectar of Devotion, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes some of the cowherd boys are very shy, a little quiet, just like some devotees are a little quiet. Some are more exuberant, very...
outgoing.
Yeah, outgoing, like extroverted personalities. So even amongst Krishna's Nitya Siddha associates, they have different personalities like that. So according to what your original relationship was with Krishna, your original identity, which has been forgotten, that becomes re-established like that. Does that answer?
Yeah. So it means that the five primary rasas in which one maintains the relationship, according to which rasa you are, that particular form you unfold at that stage. But within that, you have once again a variety.
Yeah. Yeah, because every soul is an individual. None of the cowherd boys are exactly the same, or they don't dress exactly the same. Unlimited variety of that. Is that what you're...
Yes.
No, thanks. Any other points?
And that form also takes the form of animals and seacocks and stones and grass. So from a human, jiva can take the form of a...
That's Swarup. Swarup means that is your constitutional position. But that. So if you're a peacock in the spiritual world, then you'll take the form of peacock. That is your Swarup. That is your lost relationship with Krishna. The human form of life you have here is just to enable you to get back to that original position. That's all.
Yeah, but a peacock here cannot go back to the spiritual, it has to come to a human form and only then go, is it?
What do you think?
So how will a peacock in the spiritual world, from where will, how will those peacocks be filled up in the spiritual world? Understand.
Yeah, you can't understand these things with material logic. It's nothing to do with material. Right? These are spiritual logic. Not that stuff. Was that up?
Yeah.
Why don't you fix it? Take it up properly. What's it? It's broken or something? It shouldn't be doing that. Yeah, it shouldn't be doing that. Okay, leave it. So, the point is that, for example, if someone's a peacock in the spiritual world, but a peacock in the spiritual world is not like a peacock here, because a peacock here has covered consciousness, mode of ignorance. Doesn't have the intelligence of a human being. But in the spiritual world, the peacocks are just as intelligent or just as conscious as those devotees who have human-like forms, like cowherd boys or gopis or like that. They're not less in their consciousness. Even if one is a vine or a flower or a... But the consciousness is as developed. That's the point. The chit or the consciousness, the chitta, that is as developed as the any other devotee.
Like Shukadeva Goswami is a parrot or something.
Shukadeva Goswami is a parrot. Mm-hmm. But then he's the most erudite philosopher. So in the spiritual world, then, yeah, everyone is unlimited. There's no limit. The form does not limit the consciousness. That's a material conception. So you can't place your material conceptions upon spirit, because spirit is nothing to do with it. It's not mundane. It doesn't have anything. Can you fix it? Any other points?
One more clarification. Is the form which, like, parrot for Sukadeva Goswami, was it given to him by the Lord, or he has opted for that particular form as a part and parcel when he expands?
Yeah, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. So it means that these relationships are eternal. Like that. So eternal means there was never a time when we did not exist, nor in the future shall we ever cease to be. These are eternal relationships. So it is not that the Lord gave it, it was always there. It is not that the devotee desired it was always there. So it can't be explained from like a philosophical point of view. In some way, yes, it is the Lord's desire, and it was the devotee's desire, the soul's desire, that he took that form. But there wasn't a time when the devotee did not have that form.
But you say from a philosophic point of view, Govinda is the origin, and then subsequent expansions have taken place, although you can reconcile now an absolute platform.
Yeah, so if we take it philosophically, it means that the Lord gave it and the devotee desired it. So that's true. Shukadeva desires to serve Krishna as a parrot, and Krishna desires that he has a parrot called Shukadeva. But it's always been like that also.
Is that not the right understanding to say Krishna has created, say, for example, us, to fulfill some of the rasas, the exchange of mellows? So, like the peacock or parrot, so Krishna has created parrot for, so that he can exchange this rasas, different mellows with parrot or peacock or... So once, when we abuse that status, so we are given chance, okay, you go back and then you come, so you regain what was your previous status. Is it right, Mr.?
Yeah, that's how it works. You go back to your original relationship with Krishna. Stayabha means your fixed relationship. So we've lost our original relationship with Krishna. So then we get our original relationship back. That's what we're trying to establish. Prabhupada said, I've come to teach you that which you have forgotten. You'd have to show us the reference.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to show us where it says that. I don't know. Maybe it means they can do it, but whether or not they do
it. They are very powerful.
No, it's not. I'm not saying it's not impossible.
No.
It's possible to do it.
No.
But whether or not they do it.
Yeah, one day they came when Gopa Kumara entered into Vaikuntha. One day they came as dwarfs. They took the form of small dwarfs and came. And next day they came as 400 Vishnu. Okay, actually, every day they
came. Yeah, so it's possible. Definitely possible. Okay. Since your desire to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived of this matter, because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. Haru, would you like to read?
A pure devotee of the Lord, being cognizant of the facts of the particular time, object and circumstances, always desires to expand the number of devotees of the Lord in various ways. Such expansions of transcendental service may appear to be material to the materialist, but factually they are expansions of the causeless mercy of the Lord towards the devotees. Plans for such activities may appear to be material activities, but they are different in potency, being engaged in the satisfaction of the transcendental senses of the system.
So, what's it?
This explains the mode of death attacks on Maharaj. This was the epitomizer.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
Can you say it again?
I don't understand.
You want to say it again? You said it better than this.
I'm saying that this point epitomizes the mode of His Holiness death attacks on Maharaj. Yes.
So yesterday was the last question, now what is Prabhupada mode? He answered that seeing the devotee is happy.
So this is the purpose of Lord Brahma. Why is Lord Brahma creating this universe? Right? Because whenever we do an activity, we have to see, is the activity connected to Krishna? If the activity is not connected to Krishna, the devotee has no enthusiasm to perform the activity. Just like we do any activity, right? And if there's no connection to Krishna, then the devotee feels shrama evihi kevalam, useless waste of time. Right? Just a waste of time. If there's no connection to Krishna. Just like sometimes you do a service, or you're supposed to be doing some service, but then at the end, you've spent 2 or 3 hours doing something, but then for some reason it can't be offered to Krishna. You know, some devotee asks you to write some report or something, and then at the end they say, well, we don't really need it now. Right? I was explaining to my wife a few weeks ago, I said, this is probably my number one thing that I dislike in this world. Right? When you've done something and you've wasted your time. Right? There's nothing more frustrating. Right? Because for a devotee, we like when we do something, it has to come to some result that we can offer to Krishna. We don't like to waste time. Prabhupada did not like to waste time. It's one of Prabhupada's most, one of the things that Prabhupada disliked the most. He did not like to waste time. And when he saw his disciples were wasting his time, right, or you know, performing activities but not utilizing time properly, right, or not utilizing Prabhupada's time properly, or not, you know, utilizing their service time properly, then Prabhupada became angry, disturbed by it. So the devotee does not like to waste his time. The devotee always likes to be engaged in Krishna's service, and everything must be connected to Krishna. So, Lord Brahma, his mood, as Prabhupada is pointing out here in the purport, is that he wants to connect this to Krishna. He wants to create this material world, that is his service, but how will he connect it to Krishna? Right? He will expand the family of devotees. Right? He will create the material world, but he will give service opportunities for all the jivas to engage in service to Krishna. Right? He will preach through the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Sampradaya. He will preach in such a way that he wants the devotees to take to Krishna consciousness. He wants the living entities to get. So that is, that gives him satisfaction in the creation. Otherwise, he's not going to just create a whole universe for all the living entities to just enjoy sense gratification. That will give him no enthusiasm whatsoever. But he creates the material world. And yes, many of the jivas, or most of the jivas, will be engaged in sense gratification. But he feels satisfied when some of them take to devotional service. It facilitates for them to take to devotional service. So this is his design. And Prabhupada said this is how the devotee becomes satisfied, when he increases the number of devotees. Loprama wants more and more people to take the devotional service. And this should be our mood as followers of Loprama in this Sampradaya. We should increase the number of devotees. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. And as Prabhupada himself, that was his mood. He just wanted to increase the number of devotees. And as we have just heard, Jagataka Swami has dedicated his life, as many of our historical roots have, to increasing the number of devotees. And that is perfection of human form of life. You are the original Rishi. And because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you will be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you.
The same assurance is given to Brahma in 2nd Canto, chapter 9, verse 36. Being so favored by the Lord, Brahma's schemes and plans are all infallible. If sometimes Brahma is seen to be bewildered, and in the 10th canto, he is bewildered by seeing the action of the internal potency, that is also for further advancement in transcendental service. Arjuna is found to be similarly bewildered. All such bewilderment of the pure devotee of the Lord is specifically meant for their further advancement in knowledge of the Lord.
So, any points here?
According to the advancement of Brahma having reached this position, Srila Prabhupada mentions that he was revived so that he could further advance in his transcendental service. And as a result of the pastimes where he stole all the cows and gopas for a second or so and came back, how did he spiritually advance? He knew the potential of Krishna.
Yeah, but then he developed a much deeper realization at that point in time, because he stole all the cows and cowherd boys. He had an understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then after that pastime, he had a realization of the extent of the magnitude of his potency. Right? This is called the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So in this particular pastime, out of all the pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this particular pastime shows Krishna's Aishwarya, or his supreme potency, to the highest degree. Practically one of the pastimes shows Krishna's potency. So then he understood how powerful Krishna was. Okay. So his realization increased. Just like Prabhupada would read his books, sometimes Prabhupada would be on a plane, and Prabhupada would be reading his books, and devotees would say to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, why are you reading your books?" And Prabhupada would say, "They're not my books." And that's what Prabhupada was reading, and even Prabhupada explained that even a pure devotee increases his realizations. Okay. So the Lord performs these pastimes with Lord Brahma and others, pure devotees, because they will increase their realization of how wonderful Krishna is, or how potent Krishna is.
Just a question
about
sheer curiosity. Our Brahma is the one who is saying the Vodakshaya Vishnu, or Brahma is the one who is a Brahma Samhita Brahma, who is saying Goloka Vrinda?
Right now, Brahma Samhita.
If he is saying Goloka Vrinda, he is saying Krishna, and the same Krishna is there in Vrindavan, and he will be one.
So that's why Prabhupada said it was under Yoga Maya.
Okay, and Krishna in Vrindavan was small. So if you're thinking how this small child can be Krishna, actually, and have all the potency, that he has a small body.
Yeah. But Prabhupada says here in this purport, he said he was under the influence of Yoga Maya, the internal potency. So it was an arrangement, just like Arjuna is a pure devotee, but then on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, for Bhagavad Gita to be spoken, then he became covered by Krishna. So Lord Brahma became covered by Krishna so that he could perform that pastime. It's not that Lord Brahma wasn't a pure devotee, but he became covered in order to. Prabhupada explains it. So. And the Acharyas explain it. So. The other point?
Yeah, I was thinking how maybe Krishna wanted to show how even he has a small body, he's fully fledged Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maybe that was the pastime. Maybe I have this form or that form that's
called as unlimited. Any other points?
Can I have a clarification?
question.
So the last part of the translation, the vicious mode of passion will never encourage upon you. But we know when Prabhuji went to test the Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and also Lord Vishnu, well, the Lord Brahma was affected by the mode of passion.
Yeah, so it means that sometimes you may become, due to the contact with the mode, because there's different Lord Brahmas. So if the Lord Brahma is not a pure devotee, not all of them are pure devotees, then he may become something affected by the mode of passion. If he's a pure devotee, he won't become affected. But if he's not a pure devotee, then he may have some effect, because there's so many Lord Brahmas.
So the Lord Brahma mentioned here is a pure devotee.
This Lord Brahma just saw Krishna, so then he's a pure devotee. Krishna is, or the Lord is saying that to him here. He's saying that you will not become affected because you are pure. But some Lord Brahmas are not pure.
Okay. So on that point, Prabhu, every Brahma goes through the same process. So whether the Brahma, Lord Brahma sees Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, they have seen the Vishnu Tattva. So therefore, in that sense, they should be pure. Otherwise, Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna would appear before an ordinary contaminated person.
No, not entirely, because when the Lord comes in the material world, even demigods and so forth can see him.
I see, this is realized. Here, Lord Brahma.
Yeah, they don't have full realization of who he is, but they do. The Lord does appear, just like Prabhupada explains when he came to earth, when Krishna came to earth 5,000 years ago. Even demons saw him. Even common people saw him. Not everyone understood who he was, his supreme position. So it's not entirely true that when he comes, it's not that not everyone sees him. But not everyone develops prema. So they can't see him or perceive him fully like that.
I'm not talking about everyone, only Lord Brahma. Because any Bhagavatam says that Lord Brahma realizes Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna, one of the forms.
So it depends on the level of realization. Like he may see him. So once again, it comes down to the realization. Did he see him in prema or with love? In other words, does he fully realize him as transcendental? In other words, he may see him, he may receive some instruction, and he may begin to create the universe. The heart was not fully purified. So then that Lord Brahma is still under the influence of the mode of passion to some degree. Whereas a pure devotee Lord Brahma, he sees the Lord fully realizes him through his love, through his prema. And then when he creates the universe, he doesn't become affected in any way by the mode of passion. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it just means that Krishna says, yayatama prapajante tamstatata vishamya. So as you see me, then I reciprocate accordingly. Right? So Lord Brahma may see Krishna. He may appear before him, but he doesn't have full love for Krishna. Right? He doesn't experience the full ecstasy. So he doesn't realize he's. If you don't have love for Krishna, you may see Krishna, but you don't understand your eternal identity with Krishna. If you understand your eternal identity with Krishna, as this Brahma has, then you're not affected by the modes of nature. So you may see Krishna, but it's a lower level of realization, so you're still affected by the modes. So then when you create the universe, you may be overcome by the mode of passion or something.
Which means that somewhere in Bhagavatam or some other Vedic literature, there must be a statement stating that there are some Brahmas who do not fully realize the Vishnu form or the Krishna form, so therefore they are affected by modes of material nature or mode of passion.
Yeah, as Manuji pointed out in the 10th canto, there's a story where Bhrigu Muni visits a particular Lord Brahma, and that Lord Brahma becomes affected by the mode. So because there's unlimited Brahmas practically, so many universes, so many Brahmas, so not all of them are. Because Prabhupada explains that when we come to the material world, then we take birth as Lord Brahma very often, right? First. So then how is the universe full of living entities? So obviously the Lord Brahma goes down in consciousness. So it's not every Lord Brahma is a pure devotee. Beyond the modes of material nature.
Yeah, because when somebody can fall from the spiritual world to this position of Brahma, then he can easily fall from the position of Lord Brahma to an ordinary man.
Yeah. So that makes sense? Okay. So we see Prabhupada mentions within the purport that this mode of passion does not affect this particular Lord Brahma. And this is because he is pure in his consciousness. But otherwise we see the mode of passion, as we mentioned previously, as Prabhupada mentions here, it is vicious like that. It is the cause of our identification with the mode of passion, or association with the mode of passion, perpetuates our births within this material world. The more passionate we become, the more entangled we become in the material energy. And the more entangled you become in the material energy, then the more births you take within the material energy. So this is all due to association with the material energy. So therefore it's considered very dangerous. So a devotee has to be very careful about how much he allows his consciousness to become affected by the mode of passion. Because we associate with materialistic people at our workplace every day. And because they're so in the mode of passion, then sometimes we also get very caught up in that kind of mode of work. And then we also become very passionate. And then we think the goal of life is the same as what they think. Right? And whatever they think is the goal of life, under the influence of the modes, then we also take on that consciousness. It's very dangerous. So we have to be very careful as devotees not to get too much absorbed in their consciousness. Become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Right? Just like we come together here and we all associate with Krishna, and the modes of nature become less. Right? Become more into the transcendental mode. And by hearing the Bhagavatam and going into the transcendental mode, then you become less affected by the material mode of passion. And this way you don't become so carried away. Although I am not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the five gross and three subtle elements. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that Krishna is not formless.
Okay.
Krishna has a
form.
Form of that, but his form is spiritual. Like that. So therefore, Krishna has, or the Lord has directly said to Lord Brahma here, you have understood me, right, as the supreme spiritual personality. I'm not a material personality. Right? And the Lord was not realized by Brahma as a material form. And he was not realized by Brahma as something formless. He was realized by Brahma as a spiritual personality. So this is the Lord's own definition of himself. And that's what Brahma also mentioned that he realized when he saw the Lord fire.
Can I ask a clarification here, Prabhu?
I don't have time. When you were contemplating whether there was a source to the stem of the lotus of your birth, and you even entered into that stem, you could not trace out anything. But at that time I manifested my form from within. So this is the theme that keeps going through this section of the Bhagavatam, through this particular chapter of the Bhagavatam. It is not by any material endeavor that you can understand Krishna or realize Krishna. Right? And Prabhupada has pointed this out again and again and again throughout the purports in this chapter. It is not by any material endeavor or any material qualification that you realize Krishna. It doesn't matter how wealthy you are, or how beautiful you are, or how intelligent you are, or which family you may have been born in. You cannot realize Krishna through material
assets.
Yeah. You can only realize Krishna through bhakti, right, through devotion. And as much devotion as you have, that much you realize Krishna. O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted, praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the penances you have undertaken to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. So this is an integral part of our philosophy. That it is not by our ability that we perceive or understand Krishna. Krishna is saying here to Lord Brahma that it is everything that you have is given by me. Right? Just like he says that you have chanted praising the glories of my transcendental activities. So Brahma is speaking most eloquent verses. Wonderful philosophical and poetic transcendental Sanskrit verses. Not possible for, probably for any of us, certainly not me, but probably not possible for any of us to compose verses like this to in glorification of Krishna. There's such wonderful verses coming from such a incredibly highly developed intelligence. So Krishna is saying, all of your abilities, if you do anything wonderful, I give you that ability to do that. Right? The only thing that you have is some sincerity to serve me. But if something wonderful is performed by you, actually it is me who gives you that ability to do that. I empower you with that ability. So this is the nature of a pure devotee. A pure devotee understands that actually everything comes from Krishna. Right? Whereas we don't understand that. Right, as devotees, right? We don't have that realization, right, that everything is coming from Krishna. Right? We have some sincerity, but when something good takes place, then we think that ability is coming from us. Right? We hold on to that, or become possessive of that gift which was given by Krishna. Right? Lord Brahma already said here by the Lord. Even your faith comes from me. Right? The penances you have undertaken to understand me, everything you do, or any ability you have in devotional service, that comes from me. But even your faith comes from me. Right? If a devotee is very faithful, faith means a devotee is very advanced. If a devotee has deep, deep faith in Krishna, it means he's very advanced. But Krishna says, even that faith comes from me. I created your faith, right? I facilitated your advancement to get to that point. I created all the circumstances so that you could rise to that platform and have that faith. So therefore, what do we become proud of? What do we have to become proud of? Right? Nothing. Yeah. We don't have anything to become proud of, and yet we are proud. We don't have anything to, we can't even say our faith is ours. Right? It's given by Krishna. One thing is ours is bhakti.
Is that?
Desire. Yeah. Desire is, or bhakti is holy. So our devotion is all we have. Right? Prabhupada gives the example in the Bhagavad Gita of the sparrow and Garuda. So we are just the sparrow. Right? The only thing we have is our desire to serve Krishna.
Krishna says, I give you the bhakti
too.
Yeah, but the point is from the soul, right? There must be devotion. We have independence, right? So we have devotion to Krishna. That is ours. Okay. The only thing we have is the ability to give it to Krishna. Okay. That endeavor. That the sparrow has when he tries to perform that activity, that endeavor, that is ours. Like that. But everything else is facilitated by Krishna.
Prabhupada writes one of the prophets in Canto 11, I think, says, the only thing a soul can do is to desire.
Yeah.
The desire comes from the soul.
So then bhakti would mean spiritual desire.
So just to get a clarification, because
we haven't got time, because we have to finish this session. I'm very much pleased by your description of me in terms of my transcendental qualities, which appear mundane to the mundaners. I grant you all benedictions in your desire to glorify all the planets by your activities. Any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all of his desires, for I am the Lord of all benediction. Prabhupada says in the purport that a devotee must have unmotivated desires, because if there is motivation, then Krishna will not respond in the same way. If you approach Krishna with material desire or some motivation, that you want something from God, if that's, then Krishna, he reciprocates in that way. Right? If you just approach him and you just want something material, then Krishna just reciprocates with you in that way. But if you approach God without desiring anything in return, right, in pure devotion, then Krishna reciprocates you in a completely different way, in a transcendental way. Like that. So the more pure we become, or the more unmotivated we become, ahoituki apatiyata, the more unmotivated we become in our devotion, then the more Krishna reciprocates or responds to us. It is the opinion of expert transcendentalists that the ultimate goal of performing all traditional good works, penances, sacrifices, charities, mystic activities, trances, etc., is to invoke my satisfaction. So Prabhupada explains to us in the purport that the secret of success in any activity that we perform is Krishna's satisfaction. Right? If we do any activity for Krishna and it is for the satisfaction of Krishna, then the activity becomes successful. But if we do the activity, it doesn't matter what activity we do, we can do so many, as the Lord is mentioning here, there are so many different activities you perform. But if there is no desire to please Krishna within the activity, then shrama evahi kevalam, it's useless waste of time. Right? Your activity only becomes meaningful and successful when it is done for Krishna's pleasure. I am the super soul of every individual. I am the supreme director and the dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. So the Lord is giving very powerful instructions. This is sambandhigyan. This is knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit. This must be understood. Is the realization that we must come to, right, as souls. Not to become attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but simply to become attached to Krishna. That is the only attachment that should be in our heart, in our soul. Right? Any attachment to the gross or subtle bodies, that is not coming from the soul. Right? That is all under false ego. The attachment that we must develop is to Krishna. Like that is the original attachment of the soul. That is the pure attachment. That is the real attachment. By following my instructions, you can now generate the living entities as before. By dint of your complete Vedic wisdom in the body, you have directly received from me the supreme cause of everything. The sage Maitreya said, after instructing Brahma, the creator of the universe, to expand, the primeval Lord, the personality of Godhead, in his personal form as Narayan, disappeared. So he says to Lord Brahma, I have given you the body, the ability to expand, to perform your service, to perform your desire to create this material world. Right? Now you can go ahead and create. Right? That is your desire. Do the service to me of creation. Now I will give you the full facility to do that activity. And now, in the next chapter, in the 10th chapter, we see the creation begins to manifest. Right? Up until this point, we've heard how Garbhodakshaya Vishnu has created Lord Brahma, who is Swayambhu. How Lord Brahma has manifested from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu upon the lotus, like that. We've heard all of the creation up until now, but now we hear in chapter 10 about Brahma's creation. Right? What he manifests. After this is when he has memory, his memory comes back of the Virat Rupa, or of the universal form. And now that he remembers how everything should be created, then we see how the universe begins to manifest like that. So it's very interesting subject matter. Please come again. So on Saturday night, we will begin chapter 10. Shiva Prabhupada. Yeah.